Imagine for a moment that you were a tourist in 1930s Germany, let's say between 1933 and 1939. Adolf Hitler is firmly in power. Nazi brown shirts are as much in evidence in every town, every city you visit, demanding public allegiance to the Führer. Massive nighttime parades strut the magnificence of Nazi power. Your landlady or your hotelier flies the Nazi flag and seems to have nothing but good to say of the German government. Perhaps you are a tourist seeking to reconnect with the beauties of the German countryside that your parents or your grandparents had spoken of so nostalgically. Or you're a student with some economic means sent to imbibe the classical arts and culture of the Germans. Perhaps you are an academic or a journalist on an overseas trip to see what this new Germany is all about. Or a salesman or a diplomat seeking to further the interests of your company or your nation with the German government, which, after the starkly poor post-war years of the late teens and the early 1920s, have been cast aside, you now find yourself, as the rest of the world writhes in economic depression, in a land that seems to be massively on the move economically, nonstop from the headlong rush forward that began with the Democratic Weimar Republic of the late and mid-1920s. You're traveling through the new Germany, the Germany of the National Socialist Workers' Party. But wake up! You are not in a dream. You are not in a never-never land of nightmare or of ecstasy. You are a tourist in a nation that has been writ by the Nazis. And you are writing to your colleagues, your wife, your husband, your friends back in America or England about the sights, the sounds, the tastes, the smells this once beloved land offers to you as you travel its glistening new autobahns and its ancient byways. Such is the premise of today's title, Travelers in the Third Reich, The Rise of Fascism, 1933 through 1945. It is a true story. Through contemporaneous, real-life letters, diary entries, and a scattering of newspaper and magazine articles, we travel back in time to relive the lives and the experiences of these travelers. These women and men who came to Nazi Germany, not as citizens, but as visitors to a land that had been utterly changed politically, but as the writers tell us from their contemporary perspective, changed but little in what they saw of German daily life and culture. It was a Germany that presented itself as the land of beautiful mountain-bounded rivers, small, neat villages, and art-filled medieval cities. This is a Germany we want to forget. A Germany we want to ban from our consciousness. But it was a Germany that drew thousands of tourists, as our author tells us. No matter how diverse the traveler's politics or background, our author writes, one theme unites nearly all, a delight in the natural beauty of Germany. You did not have to be pro-Nazi to marvel at the green countryside, the vineyard-flanked rivers, or the orchards stretching as far as the eye could see. Meanwhile, pristine medieval towns, neat villages, clean hotels, the friendliness of the people, and the wholesome, cheap food, not to mention Wagner, window boxes, and foaming steins of beer, drew holidaymakers back year after year, even as the more horrific aspects of the regime came under increasing scrutiny in their own countries. It is, of course, the human tragedy of these years that remains paramount, but the extraordinary pre-war charm of such cities as Hamburg, Dresden, Frankfurt, or Munich, highlighted in so many diaries and letters, serves to emphasize just how much Germany, and indeed the whole world, lost materially because of Hitler. Well, how and why were so many of these visitors able to ignore the not-so-invisible signs of a nation under siege from within? How could visitors to the Nazi state ignore the plight of the Jewish citizens of Germany, plainly evident in the hate-filled posters that dotted most every town and city? How to ignore the ruffian nature of the brown-shirted youth who scoured the city streets and physically assaulted those who did not offer Heil at every storefront, cafe, or other public meeting. On the surface, our author tells us, many of these traveling folks were simply so captivated by the Germany they had known before the war, and that would be World War I, or the Germany their parents and grandparents had spoken of as home before they had immigrated abroad. Others, we're told, were quite taken by the Nazi cultivation of German discipline, order, neatness, hard work. And our author shares with us, there were then, as now, far too many regular folks and political commentators who were happy to turn a blind eye to viciously evil activities that these self-styled upstanding Brits and Americans were all too happy to say were but, quote unquote, temporary aberrations of a political and social revolution that bade such improvements to Germany and some hoped Western societies as a whole once those initial bitter actions had burned themselves out. Yes, many travelers to the Third Reich, sadly we're told, were not at all that upset by the Nazi proscriptions against Jews, against homosexuals, against those in the population who were not part of the larger white Western population. For this was a time in our modern history, our author writes, when a romantic view of the black-clad stormtroopers was a viable alternative reality. As a writer on a literary tour of the Third Reich from the now defeated France wrote of his admiration for the Nazis, quote, the feeling I have when I consider German society as a whole, he subsequently wrote a long essay, is aesthetic in nature. It is a question of moral beauty, courage, will, self-denial, decency, and various forms of health, and also of style and creativity. The high-toned atmosphere of National Socialism was the hallmark of a reception he and other writers attended in the Vienna Hofburg, as he wrote. This troop of foreigners did not make a very good showing in the royal apartments. We were seated at about 20 round tables, each lit by a circle of red candles and decorated with a bouquet of autumn leaves amid splendid china from an earlier age. The electric light was extinguished. We listened to a Bach chorale, a song hummed by children's voices, then a Mozart quintet, after which the pure song with his restrained resonances was repeated. The general silence, the half-darkness that shrouded the participants, the flickering of the red candles, the autumn foliage, and the really beautiful music united to create a sort of spiritual spectacle. There were no speeches that evening. As we may expect, the story of tourists traveling to and around the expanded Nazi state grew ever smaller as the 1930s gave way to the war-filled 1940s. Though interesting, the late 1930s and early 1940s, when Nazi Germany was running over more and more of Europe and Northern Africa, the flow of loosely defined tourists from America, the Far East, and yes, even from Great Britain continued, though in much smaller numbers. These travelers were graduate students, scholars, diplomats, journalists, who founded Germany now at siege from without as well as from within, a population that was increasingly living with daily privations. But even wartime Germany was still firmly in the grip of the Nazi government and of their propagandists. Indeed, as we near the end of this travelogue and as World War II rages, the text turns increasingly bleak and dark as even journalists find themselves in potentially dire straits. Reader's note, the final chapter lists brief biographies of each of the travelers who are quoted at length in the book, and a succeeding bibliography offers interested readers the opportunity to follow up with so many of these folks and their observations. This is a book that is easy to read, but well researched and presented. The author concludes, and so we share, with a final return to thoughts of how so many travelers to the Nazi Germany of the 1930s could be taken in by this authoritarian regime. As our author tells us, no foreign traveler in the Third Reich, whether casual tourist or seasoned diplomat, could escape the relentless propaganda. But how much were they influenced by it? At its most sophisticated, as at the Olympics, for example, it could be highly effective. But for most part, it was by the late 1930s too crude to leave much mark on overseas visitors, even those sympathetic to the Nazis. What impressed them far more were conversations held with individuals, particularly the young. Many travelers were astonished by the degree of idealism and patriotic devotion expressed by ordinary Germans, unmatched by anything they could cite in their own countries. It was this sense of purpose that many foreigners found inspirational, especially when they remembered the unemployed youth loitering aimlessly on street corners back home. Compare a Fräulein or a French girl of the same age, remarked a Swiss academic, after hearing of an 18-year-old German girl who spent her spare time organizing her group's gymnastics, political sessions, and visits to the poor. Travelers' accounts expose another aspect of the Third Reich that might seem surprising, namely the vulnerability of the man on the street. His longing to be liked, understood, and above all respected by foreigners, especially the British and the Americans, is a constant theme, this neediness is at odds with the more familiar image of an aggressive racist population eager for war. In fact, if the witnesses in these pages are to be believed, the great majority of Germans dreaded war just as deeply as those on whom they were about to inflict it. Perhaps the most chilling fact to emerge from these travelers' tales, our author tells us, is that so many perfectly decent people could return home from Hitler's Germany singing its praises. Nazi evil permeated every aspect of German society, yet, when blended with the seductive pleasure still available to the foreign visitor, the hideous reality was too often and for too long ignored. More than eight decades after Hitler became chancellor, we are still haunted by the Nazis. It is right that we should be. It's quite a read. Travelers in the Third Reich, The Rise of Fascism, 1919 through 1945 by Julia Boyd. It is a book that not only will you not be able to put down, it's a book you will long remember after the last page is read. Travelers in the Third Reich is available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.